That way we're not getting any feedback through on the system. So we'll get underway anyway. Sharon will join us as soon as she can. She's obviously having a few technical issues. So welcome everybody to this council meeting for the 12th of May. It gives me great pleasure to ask Miriam is going to take the council prayer for us. Miriam.
Can you all hear me? Hope so. Okay, let's pray. O God of our nation, of our tupuna and history, our present and our future generations, as we focus together on today's agenda, grant us understanding and discernment, the ability to consider these matters from various perspectives, in order that we might make wise decisions on behalf of our district and the people of our communities. We ask you to guide us as we seek to protect, enhance and empower our community in these difficult times, whilst also laying down good foundations for those who will follow us. We ask this in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen.
Thank you for that, Miriam. Right, okay, moving on to apologies. We don't have any apologies. I see Sharon's just trying to connect to the audio now, so obviously she's coming in. Welcome to everybody else who's here. Welcome along, Al, and also Peter. Our visitors, I believe we've got visitors coming to join us. Carolyn, later on, the police sergeant is coming to give us a bit of an update. So we'll take that as it comes. Conflicts of interest. Councillors, a reminder that if they have a pecuniary interest to any item on the agenda, they must declare this interest and refrain from discussing or voting on the item. And you're obviously suggested that you withdraw from the meeting table. So does anybody have any conflict of interest in relation to anything that's in the agenda today? We don't? Very good. Moving on to identification of major or minor items. There's nothing that I'm aware of, Carolyn. That's correct.
Aye. No.
Thank you for that. So moving on to confirmation of the minutes held on the 14th of April. I'll take them as read. Is there any alterations or corrections to the minutes of the 14th of April? If there's not, can I have somebody move that the minutes are accepted? Move Councillor Paul, seconded Councillor O'Connor. All in favour, please raise your hand. Carried. Thank you for that. Moving on to, I'm just flicking through my agenda, so I've got it right. Obviously, we have no Mayor's report, Deputy Mayor's, Councillors, Chief Executives, or Council Action report at this meeting. So we'll move straight into the Human Resources report, and I'll hand over to Fiona. Thank you, Fiona.
Good morning, everybody. I will take it that you have read my report as usual, and if there are any questions, I'm happy to answer them.
Do we have, so anybody have any questions for you, for Fiona? Councillor Paul.
Sorry, it's always been the fact that the leave liability, putting on my audit risk hat, the leave liability looks like it's spiking. So I just wondered why.
Well, during lockdown, no staff have been able to take annual leave. So that is why the leave liability has spiked. It is a consequence of COVID-19, and there is not a lot we can do about that at the moment. We will endeavour, when we get back to normal life, to get as many staff to take leave as we possibly can. But it might be a little bit difficult with business as usual, because a lot of staff will be trying to catch up on some work that maybe they haven't been able to do while in lockdown.
Oh, a lot of businesses have for lack of a better term, made their staff take annual leave during this time. So I just, to use up some of the annual leave. So I know, for instance, Air New Zealand has, I know the warehouse has. So I just wondered how that works. I think, I know Stuart wants to say that, but I just feel that we owe our ratepayers that, just saying.
Yeah, so maybe you could comment on that, Stuart.
Yeah, look, thanks, Craig. Look, you know, it's simple. It's employment law. You cannot force your employees to take leave without just cause. And we had no reason to force our employees to take leave. There have been a couple of other councils around the country that have tried to do that. Point in case was Invercargill. I don't know whether you saw that in the news. Where the CE not only required people to, well, actually what the CE did, or the council, well, actually it wasn't the council, it was the CE, required all the employees and put them down to 50% remuneration, and they were to make up the difference with their annual leave credits, which we saw come out. I put a couple of comments out there straight away saying this is in breach of employment law. Sure enough, a week later, the unions and a couple of lawyers got involved, and that has been overturned. What can happen when you try and do things like that is not only do you actually have to reissue those credits back to those employees, but some of them may even seek compensation for stress. It's just one of those very, very difficult things. The better position is actually just to get through this and then manage the excess leave as an issue beyond the other side of COVID. But we've been trying to manage this, and I'll be honest with you, councillors, for two and a half years, and we are sort of making some slow improvements. But we've got to do more. But if it's not just COVID, but if you think back to the time that I've been with council, which is now 3 years, you know, we've had three waters, we've had various other machinery changes of government giving more unfunded mandate to councils all the time. The opportunities to take leave are very limited. With limited resources, but we will work on it. I know it is an issue. I accept that. And we'll work on it as soon as we get to the other side of this this virus.
Thanks for that, Stuart. Any other questions for Fiona at all? If there's not, can I have somebody move that Fiona's report is accepted? Move Councillor Morton, seconded Councillor Paul. I'll take the motion. All in favour, please raise your hand. Against, carried. Thank you for that. Moving on to item 15, health and safety report. Obviously, Lucy's not with us today, so I'll hand over to Paul. Good morning, Paul.
Good morning, Mr. Mayor. Now, the report is very similar to the report that went to the committee last time, so there's nothing much to add other than I'm available for questions if there are any.
Does anybody have any questions for Paul at all? Councillor Paul.
Sorry, I just, there was no mention, and I realised that Lucy's part of the civil defence, da-da-da-da, but there was no mention of the council's health and safety with regard to COVID-19. So I just wondered how that, in the report, so should there have been? I don't know.
Yeah, thanks, Councillor. The reporting period doesn't cover the lockdown, but it just started at the tail end of this. And I think we were thinking and planning health and safety wise. We did some business continuity planning. We did some other civil defence planning at the start before we went into lockdown, which covered off a lot of the COVID-19 risks, if you like. So it didn't appear in this because it's not in the reporting period.
Thanks for that, Paul. Any other questions for Paul at all? If there's not, I'm happy to move that this report's accepted. Do I have a seconder? Seconded Councillor Morton. I put the motion. All, please raise your hand. Against, carried. Thank you for that. Moving on, obviously we have no audit and risk report today, so we move to agenda item 17, which is the Civil Defence Emergency Management's Operations Centre report. Just before we get underway, I would like to take this opportunity to pass on my thanks and the thanks of the council to Paul and his team for an absolutely outstanding job that they have done in this difficult time, and also obviously to Stuart for his management of it. I think everybody has worked extremely well, and things have gone as well as we could have, probably better than we could have asked for. So congratulations, Paul, on an outstanding effort for you and your team in that EOC centre, and may it continue for not too much longer. So we'll take the report as read. We have any questions for Paul? No questions? No, that's good. It doesn't surprise me. It's a very comprehensive report. Stuart.
Yeah, thank you, Craig. Paul, I'm just wondering whether you don't take the opportunity to take the councillors through the stand down of the EOC just very quickly. Good opportunity to do so.
Yeah, thanks, Stuart, and thanks, Mr. Mayor, for your kind words. I'll pass those on to the team. We are looking at the moment, we've been discussing it this morning, and we're thinking, with Community Link not being back in their office until Monday, that we would keep the EOC up and running until Monday morning, and we'll assess at that point whether or not we can stand it down physically. In terms of capturing information and processes and all the lessons learned, we'll be doing that over the rest of this week to make sure that we've got everything we need for if we have to escalate in the near future, or if we have another pandemic in a year's time, whatever it might be. So in the interim, what we're doing is we're talking to some of our clients. We've got 55 clients that we've been delivering groceries to. We've done over 200 deliveries, and we've got $4,500 worth we've done over the lockdown period of grocery shopping. So we're talking to those people individually today and tomorrow about standing down that service. Whether or not Community Link want to pick up an aspect of it, that's up to Community Link, their board, whether or not they want to step in if they think there's a need. But what we're finding is the demand for deliveries is dropping off fairly steeply, naturally, now, as we approach level two. We anticipate there might only be 7 or 8, 10 people left on that list by the time we hand over to Community Link on Monday. So we're just talking to the health people, the Community Vehicle Trust, who should have indicated to me that they will stand up at level two and start operating again. And we're just talking to all our community partners about how we step back without leaving any gaps or any nasty surprises for anybody. And so far, everybody's on the same page and we seem to be all traveling in the right direction. So that's where we're at. So hopefully Monday will be stood down. Yeah.
Well, thank you for that, Paul. Just a quick question is, any indication of how long you think that the government will remain in a state of emergency? I know it gets reviewed every 7 days. Do you think that's likely to change?
I think it's reviewed every Wednesday currently. And the feeling at group level is that it will be allowed to expire next Wednesday. But there's no confirmation of that. That's just somebody's opinion who's higher up the food chain in civil defence terms. Yeah. So hopefully that'll expire to coincide with level two.
Right.
I can't think of emergency powers that would be needed at level two. So it's my opinion as well that that will just be allowed to expire, but we'll see.
Well, no, thanks for that, Paul. Stuart, you had a comment?
Yeah, thank you, Craig. I just wanted to, I guess the basis of that conversation was just to alert councillors that whilst we might go out of a state of emergency and we might give the appearance that the EOC has stood down, it may very well be technically, but it's going to continue to idle in the background. There's some tail end things that the government's going to want us to do in terms of reporting. It gets a little bit muddy for me as the CE because, of course, at some point I want to bring back a strict set of rules where I bring all employees back and then, you know, we switch back to that if you want to take leave or if you want to toil or, you know, if you fall ill, well, you've got to start ploughing through your sick leave credits or your annual leave credits. So there is some grey area there that I'll probably work with Paul towards the end of this week and just sort of discover what that means. There's the, what do they call it, Paul? The community...
Caring for communities.
Yeah, so there's a bit of an unknown there as to what resources we're going to have to continue to apply to that. But anyway, that was just the key message. There will be a tail end to this. It will not be stopping abruptly.
All right. Thanks for that, Stuart. Miriam, question?
Yeah, I'm just wondering, when will we be able to have an idea of when facilities reopen? I know there was a little bit of casual chat about that before the meeting started, but will there be some kind of announcement to the public as far as parks and public toilets and playgrounds and library and all of that sort of thing?
Stuart?
Yeah, thank you, Mayor. So tomorrow I plan to have a fairly solid leadership team meeting where we will discuss, firstly, staff health and safety, and then what it means as we reopen things. But I anticipate that, you know, we probably won't start until Monday, even though Thursday we may be able to. I think Thursday and Friday we'll take the opportunity to prepare and work out that social distancing. You know, under alert level two, we still are required to, anybody that come into contact with, it's got to be those traceability requirements have got to be there. What does that mean? How do we get that across to members of the public coming into the front desk? And there's also some things that we need to put in place. There's some screens that we want to put up at in reception and things like that. So to answer your question, Councillor Morton, yes, we'll work it through. We'll make sure the staff are on board and can support the decisions made, that the health and safety is a priority, and then we'll go out to public and let everybody know. But we'll be wanting to do it as quickly as possible.
Thanks for that, Stuart. Any other questions for Paul or Stuart at all? If there's not, can I have somebody move the reports accepted? Moved Councillor Morton, seconded Councillor Pankhurst. I put the motion, all in favour, please raise your hand for those I can see. Those against, carried. Thank you for that. Moving on to agenda item 17.2, the litter infringement fee. Again, we'll take the report as read and any questions for Paul at all. Councillor Paul, and then Councillor Morton.
Just... page 25, 5C, I just querying if they're unable to remove the rubbish, so then does council remove it? And if council removes it, do we include the cost of council removing it in the fine? Are we allowed to do that? And the second part was, do signs have to go up at the various recycling depots to that effect? So that people say, no, they can't say, oh, I didn't know, because of the signs are there. Two parts.
Thanks, Councillor Paul. The, if the offender is unable to remove the litter, we could issue the fine and use and that would cover the costs of us engaging a contractor to pick up the litter, basically. They're all factors that are factored into the decision making around whether or not a fine should be issued at all, or a warning, or whatever it might be, using the enforcement policy that we looked at about a year ago that was introduced. So this was all part of that. So that would guide the decision making around whether or not the fine was issued. But we get the fine, the proceeds from the fine come to the council, and we are able to use those proceeds to cover the cost of cleaning up if we need to. Our preference is that we don't issue fines unless it's the absolute worst kind of offending, really. But all of that goes into the matrix of deciding whether or not what the appropriate action is in the first place, really. Ideally, people go pick it up and they get a warning letter and they don't do it again. But not everybody's like that yet.
So what about the sign? Will there be signs up to say?
I think there should be signs at the recycling stations. There will be a public notification of a decision today if council decides to go with setting a fine, an infringement fine level. And then after the prescribed period, which escapes me, it's either 9 or 14 days, we can start issuing fines if we need to.
Well, thank you for that. Thanks for that, Paul. Can I just remind everybody that if you're not talking, can you please just mute your screen so that we don't get any feedback? Thank you. Councillor Morton, you had a question for Paul?
Yeah, I was just trying to work out how the $300 compares to the fine, the infringement fee we have for those who leave their dog feces on footpaths, etc. Just to get my head around, are we, you know, talking a load of household rubbish versus a dog feces, which is also dangerous, I know, but the size comparison and the cleanup costs associated. Just wanted to get the space, the size comparison, that's all.
Yeah, I haven't, thanks for your question, Councillor Morton. Off the top of my head, I can't remember what the fine is for allowing a dog to poo in public. However, I am familiar with what other councils are doing for litter, and that Timaru have set theirs at 400, which is at the maximum, or it was when I was there. I'm pretty sure it still is. Dunedin have a graduated model where if it's a KFC wrapper or a McDonald's bucket or whatever it might be left on the ground, it can be $100. If it's an 80 litre bin amount of household rubbish, it could be $200. And if it's more than that, it could be $400. We've looked at all those different ways of doing it, and we plumbed for $300 to make it a significant amount, so that it would be a deterrent as well as curb behaviour in future, but also so it's not beyond people's ability to pay. We're trying to find that balance and keep it simple, so that you understand that if you are fined, it's just that's what it is. So there's different ways of approaching it, but I'm not aware of any comparisons between dog control act fines and litter act fines. The two run separately. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks for that. Councillor O'Connor and then Councillor Owen.
Thank you, sir. I'm particularly pleased to see this. Fly dumping has been a particular problem for all the communities along State Highway 1 and particularly around the beaches. If I change anything at all, I would change number 7. The infringement fee could be up to 400. And that gives staff some flexibility and some discretion. At the moment, it's 300 set, and so there's not a lot of discretion there. I'm unconcerned about people's inability to pay. I've got no mercy on these people at all. But I think that fee, if you're going to change anything at all, I would have had it up to $400. $400 is a maximum allowed by the law.
Yeah, I probably disagree a little bit there, Tom. I think that it's good to set a level that's black and white. I'd rather have it that it's just a set level at $300 rather than some otherwise you start getting into arguments as to why was I fined 400 and he was only fined 300 or 250 or whatever. So I think it's better to have it just as a solid 300 and that sort of thing. And obviously, great to hear that, you know, obviously fine is the last action, that we're obviously all about education, not giving punitive punishments. But Councillor Owen, you had a question.
Yes, we'll have, is it the one officer? Are we talking about Mr. McKerrow is to be that officer? And does that mean it's the one officer that will be the patrol person or the fines person?
Paul, you have an answer to that?
Yeah, thanks, Mr. Mayor. Thanks, Councillor Owen. There are several regulatory staff that have a delegation to deal with litter, as litter officers. Johns is our... Johns McKerra is our go-to man for daily business as usual. But, for example, if our animal control officer is out and about and see somebody dropping litter, she has a delegated authority to use the powers under the Litter Act to get them to pick it up and to get them obtain their details. So there are several of us, including myself, that have a delegated authority, but in terms of real business as usual approach, it will be Johns McKerra, the enforcement officer, compliance officer.
And could I just ask if this would also go down to the fact of dropping, let's say, your cigarette butt or a packet, an empty packet, pie packet or wrapper or whatever. Does that also apply?
It does. And if a litter officer with that delegated authority saw somebody do that, the appropriate action would be to identify yourself as a litter officer and ask them to pick it up. And most people would do that. There's also powers to obtain details, but there's no power of arrest or anything like that. So you would simply obtain details, and depending on the actions that the person decided to take, dictate what happened from there. Using the guidance provided by the enforcement policy.
Thank you.
Right, thanks for that. Any other questions for Paul at all? If there's not, can I have somebody move, one, that the report is accepted, and two, that the infringement fees of $300 is approved. Move, Councillor Fox. Seconded, Councillor Owen. All in favour, please raise your hand. Against? Carried. Thank you for that. Sheila, are you against it, or?
I was just on the same page as Tom, that I thought it should be a maximum of 400.
Right. Okay, so that's been moved, seconded, and carried. You got all that, Carolyn? Righto, moving on to item 17.3, which is the finance report. David, question?
Yeah, could I just say that appropriate publicity would be brought to the public's attention, over a few months, I would take it?
Yeah, well, obviously, any new infringement that we bring in like this will be appropriately circulated amongst our ratepayers and visitors so that they're aware of the infringement fines and that sort of thing. So, yeah, we'll take that as a gimme. And that, I see Stuart straight shaking his head. So moving on to 17.3, which is the finance report. We'll take it as read. And questions for Tina.
Good morning, everyone. Perhaps I'll just give a brief overview. So the report is the nine months to the 31st of March, so it's essentially a pre-lockdown report, which is obviously a pertinent point to make. The overall result is a surplus of 372,000 compared to a budgeted deficit of 118,000. So we're tracking 490,000 ahead of where we expected to be. Most of the major variances that are noted in the report are the same or similar to previous reports. There were a couple of new notes in there for your attention. Fees and charges has got a favourable variance of 42,000, which is predominantly due to increased camping income and building consent activity compared to budget. Roading operational costs conversely have a negative variance in that their costs have exceeded budget by 134,000 due to spending on drainage maintenance, nettling and emergency reinstatement works. We're in a more positive cash position than what we forecast, which is a combination of timing of capital works or the fact that we're ahead of where we expected to be given the favourable variances. If there's any questions on pages 27 or 28, let me know. Otherwise, move on to page 29, which is our CapEx, capital expenditure. So you'll see there we've adjusted the percentage that's been reported as being completed for any items that we expect to not proceed this year. So after that adjustment, we're sitting at 61% complete. The remainder of the report is just, of course, by group as our normal presentation. So if there's any questions for me or any of the activity managers, now would be the time. Thank you.
Thanks, Tina. Councillor Pankhurst, you have a question?
Oh, just on the three waters, have we heard any more about that? Can anybody enlighten me on that?
At this stage, we haven't heard anything additional, but we are expecting something from central government within the next week to 10 days, so we'll keep you informed.
Thanks, Greg.
Probably just a quick comment I'd just like to make here is that I think the telltale will be the next report, which is will be post-COVID-19. And I think that we're extremely lucky that we're in a positive balance leading into what's going to be a very difficult and challenging time moving forward. Hopefully we can carry on and make sure that our capital works program is fully up to date and 100% subscribed so that we can keep that employment running throughout the district. Now, someone had their hand up. I was looking, Stuart, you had a comment.
Yeah, thank you, Mayor. Dan, I just had a quick question for you, and I apologise because we haven't had a conversation prior to the meeting, but what's your take on the effect of our capital works, particularly in roading, with the lockdown? Because I know that the normal work program has not progressed as it is planned, and we are heading into those into winter where the weather may affect. Have you had any feedback from Robert or?
We're aware that there is some maintenance that has been delayed and that we need to get to that. So the likes of the access track to the White Horse needs a little bit of work done to it. I think the next week we will really be ramping up back into those maintenance activities. And once we get all the team back into the Gorge Road office, I think that we'll be pushing to get work completed in preparation for winter.
Thanks, Dan. And the other comment I'll make, and I think I made this to councillors before, is that Tina, you'll agree that we had quite a nice report, interim audit report from the auditors with some great comments. And as I've already said from time to time, you know, we congratulate Melissa and Tina, as we should, on a great job imposing all of the controls and running Treasury like a well-oiled machine. But then my gratitude's got to go right through to every staff member that uses and makes a purchase, uses the electronic order system, complies with the delegations, which enables that audit report to be presented clean. And I think you'll agree with that, Tina. I just wanted to make that quick comment. Thank you, Mayor.
Thanks for that, Stuart. Yeah, definitely. It's a great team effort, and it's nice to be having those great comments from audit. It shows that we're moving rapidly in the right direction. So is there any more questions for Tina in relation to the finance report at all? Councillor Pankhurst.
Oh, just on that Waikiki Heat rural water, I just think maybe we should be looking at that upgrade, and I know we can't do much until the government are telling us what to do, but I think it seems pretty, there's quite a big cost here, and I'm not quite sure why.
Maybe Dan, can you give us an update on that?
I can give you an update on the project. We've just finished drilling a bore, and that has tested to 10 litres per second, but the water quality was not as good as we would have liked. But unfortunately, with these schemes, you've got to take the best of a bad bunch. So we are continuing to look at that project, and in fairness, we are waiting to hear what the government's position is before going through with a significant capital spend in that area. So we will make decisions post Friday. I think the budget is Thursday. We should have an announcement on Friday in regards to the shovel-ready projects. And after that, we'll be making some decisions as to what to do. So we will be taking those results and providing them to suppliers to give us an indication as to what the best treatment options are for that source water. And we have also taken some additional tests directly of Waitaki water to see whether that is a viable option as well.
Thanks, Dan.
Anything else, Colin, that you want to?
No, that's fine at the moment. I think we have to look in that in the future, but that's fine at this stage.
Thank you for that. Right, I'm happy to move that the finance report is accepted. Do I have a seconder? Councillor Kane, I'll put the motion. All those in favour, raise their hand. Those against, carried. Thank you for that. Right, so now moving on to agenda item 17.4, and it gives me great pleasure to welcome along Brian, our sergeant, who's going to give us a bit of an update on what's happening around the district. So welcome along, Sergeant Ennis.
Yeah, morning. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, good, thank you.
That's good. Thanks for the invite along to my inaugural meeting. Just a brief rundown. Over the COVID period, we think most of the public have been quite compliant. We're not aware of any issues around businesses or any dramas from customers like your supermarkets, your pharmacy. I read locally a lot of the people are working, so it may have helped. As we've got through the various levels, our workload has probably increased a little bit, not to say that it's increasing all the time, but just to say as people are getting out and about, things are starting to change. Over the last few months, I'll speak generically here, we've had several road crashes. Unfortunately, two people have passed away and a couple of those. We've had burglaries, mental health, and also family harm are otherwise ongoing. So we've had some of that as well. Be interested to see how we go when we get to level two. Personally, I'm expecting our work will increase, maybe increase to normal levels, but I'll be expecting more calls for service. Over the whole lockdown side of things, we've been business as usual. There's been a little traffic on the roads. Station's been closed. But we've had our 10-5 number, which is 24/7 free number that we report things. That's about it from us, really.
All right, thanks for that, Brian. And listen, please pass on to your staff the council's thanks for the outstanding job that they've done, obviously, over these difficult times. And probably just one question that I'd have is, obviously, domestic violence tends to come to the fore, and difficult times like this. Have we seen a marked increase at all in that offending during this lockdown period?
I wouldn't say a marked increase. If you can understand people's bubbles, you know, I speak generically again, you know, people are away at work or doing what they do, probably getting on each other's nerves around, you know, the same company, four walls, you know, cabin fever, for want of a better word. We've had a few. And as I say, I think what's helped us here is, you know, majority of people are still at work, you know, with your dairy factories, your farming, and that sort of stuff. So that's helped. Interesting to see how we go forward, you know, with the businesses surviving and employment, et cetera, et cetera. But there are family harms always at the front of our minds. You know, it's the same nationally. You know, I wouldn't say there's been an increase, no.
No, that's fantastic news. Great to hear. Any questions? Councillor Kane.
Just from our side of that too. Sorry, I may have interrupted you.
That's right.
Just from our side of it, we've had regular updates from your civil defence team, and we found that quite informative and helpful for what we've been trying to do without, you know, knocking on doors and talking to people. So that's been appreciated from our end as well, if you could pass that on.
Yeah, I'll make sure Paul's listening, and I'm sure he'll pass it on to his staff. And, you know, it's obviously a key relationship between council and the local law enforcement. So, Councillor Kane, you had a question?
Yeah, nice to meet you, Sergeant Ennis. Just wondering what our staffing is like in the Waimate District at the moment. I know we struggled for quite some time with maternity leave and a range of officers needing to be reinstated or finding people to fill positions. How are we like staffing wise now, and what are we covered with?
We're fully complemented. We have our allocation of staff, so most shifts and people are working, including St Andrews. We have seven constables. Yeah, six constables. So they work earlies and lates and on call requirements. So we're fully complemented as far as staffing goes at the moment.
Well, that's great. Great news that we're at full complement of staff. I know it's been a bit of a challenge over the last.
And we have our mainstay. Sorry, we have our mainstay channel front camera as well.
Right. Any other questions for Sergeant Ennis at all? If there's not, thank you, Brian, for zooming in and giving us an update. And we look forward to catching up face-to-face once we move down to level two.
Councillor Owen had a quick question.
Oh, sorry. Councillor Owen?
My thoughts were around perhaps increased use of some drugs in the area, Sergeant. Has that been noticed during this lockdown?
The information coming to us is there will be usage, there's no denying that, but I don't know if there's been an increase other than that we're using prior to.
Thanks for that, Brian. Obviously, it's something that we do want to keep on top of, and that's something I'm sure you're doing your best to keep it under control as much as we can. So, any other questions for Brian at all? If there's not, again, yeah, thanks for zooming in, Brian. It was great to catch up, and we'll see you out the other side on Thursday.
Sounds good.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Cheers.
Thank you for that. Okay, moving on to agenda item 17.5, which is the Economic Development Steering Group Whitehorse Development Project, Stage 1. Michelle, do you want to give us a bit of an update on this, and then we'll open it up for questions, or either Michelle or Ian, one or the other?
Good morning. So Ian is joining us, so I'll let him speak on this. Thank you.
Good morning, councillors and Mr. Mayor. My voice is a bit croaky, but I guess that's from being cabin fever for 8 weeks or whatever long it is. I'm looking forward to a life again after the living at home, but I've enjoyed my office as well. Just imagine if we'd had an 86 flood while this was going on. I just pondered on that listening to the council discussion. How would we have coped when we're not allowed to have close contact? So it's all been very good. Waimate's very fortunate. But what I've learnt with all these Zoom meetings, councillors, is that I've seen the hairs in people's noses so close lately that I'm thinking, oh man, let's get back to face-to-face discussions, because some people get real close to the screen and some don't. I'm quite a way away because you don't want to see any hairs up my noses. So, but the report's the key thing, and it's very, very in-depth report from Michelle. I like the way she's laid it out with the background proposal and then the considerations and the recommendations. Now, to me, it's two-pronged, really. We've worked long and hard, I think, particularly Joe Sutherland and Michelle, to come to this point to get a workable plan and a workable proposal. Now, part one is we're prepared to contribute $20,000 in cash. Part two is the in-kind work, council ratepayers' money going towards the roading upgrades. So it's really two parts, but if we don't put any cash in, then we're not showing a realistic amount of support to the Waimate Together team who are putting the application to the DIA. And I think that's really a key point to consider today, is we've got to show some tangible monetary support to what potentially they're applying for several hundred thousand dollars. And to that end, I think, well, our group, the Economic Development Group, we're starting to build a really good relationship with the Waimate Together team, and we've got to continue that. And, you know, we're ready to go with the community involvement. Already some community groups have had a taste of what we're looking to do. Initial feedback's been very positive, just from a verbal, you know, response. But this proposal in front of you has had two iterations at least. We've gone back to the planners, and this is what we've come up with, and I think it's a really, really exciting project. And I mean, you know, we've been in lockdown for so long. I think community and development is one area where we as a team of Waimate can actually get stuck into a project that's, we can watch it evolve, we can watch it develop, and we can all get part of it again. For too long, I think we've been in separate little bubbles. This is one way our community can really get involved. Happy to answer any questions about the roading. The picture is self-explanatory. Robert Moffat's come up, I think, with it's a budget proposal, small budget, but I think it's a step in the right direction. The direction of travel is, let's start at that key crunch point where the turnoff is. Let's see how that ceiling works, and maybe down the track, if the numbers of tourists and family local people grow, we'll look at actually increasing the preparation up that next 500 metres. But this will give us a good starter for 10, I believe. And I could go on and on about it, but I think we as a group fully endorse the recommendation from that Michelle's written up there. We want your support. We need your support, and so does Waimate Together. And together we'll all achieve more. That's quite basically the bottom line. Heaps of questions, please.
All right, thanks for that, Ian. Councillor Paul.
Hi. Just on page 36, 8 and 9, I just wondered, how did you get this amount in number 8? And if you take off what you're asking council, is Waimate Together going to apply for the rest? I was just a little confused.
Michelle will probably correct me when I'm always wrong, but we were actually, the $304,000 is fully itemized in the bulk of your report. But Waimate Together are confident the more they can apply for, they're pretty confident they'll get a lot of this money. Remembering that DIA has already supported the research and the drawing up of the plan as well, which was some $20,000, Michelle, originally.
Yes.
It's, No, the bulk of it should come from DIA, but then we want community support as well, and some of that will be in kind, which we can knock off the budget. Now, Michelle might be better to clarify that, but that's the way I take it. If the Rotary Club do a whole lot of work up there and build the seats, that comes out of the $304,000 as a gift in kind. So, but we're waiting to see what we get out of DIA.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks for that. Any other questions for Ian at all? Sheila, you had another question?
Just a comment that personally, I think we took my family up there last year and they were blown away with it the way it is. So improving it has to be super good. I think personally, we as a council don't take up this. We will be grossly negligent to our community because it will offer us economic value. And if we don't do it now, we're going to be left behind, I reckon. I just wanted to say that.
Right. Thanks Sheila.
Sheila, if I could respond to that, thank you for that, because I think when I spoke to the council meeting last time, I said, this is like putting it all on black at the roulette. You know, this is a big project, but it's had huge support from the community right from the start of consultation with the Mayor's Development Committee. So I agree with you. We can't drop the ball at this point and come out and say, oh, times are tough, we better not do this. This, I think, is a rallying flag almost to the community.
Thank you, Ian. Councillor McElwee and then Councillor Kane.
Yeah, just to Ian, you were saying the funding should be forthcoming. I just got a wee bit of concern over that. You know, the timing for, you know, I appreciate it as a good project, but the timing, you know, with COVID going on is not brilliant. And if that balance of that money isn't forthcoming, I've just got some concerns. What would happen then?
Michelle might be able to give you more comfort, I think. But look, this is a separate budgeted fund, the DIA, and they've got money they've got to spend. And Waimate's one of the few that have been chosen to be participants in that. So if we don't put our hand up for it, that money could end up in Cromwell. Well, there's about five groups around the region. So we want to put our hand up for it. If it doesn't come to two, whatever we get, we're going to get something. They're confident we'll get a good number. If not, we go back to the community. We go back to the drawing board. We relook at the budget. But I think we don't want to get run out without facing a ball because of COVID-19. I suppose that's my view is, this is time when the government will help to spend money to get local initiatives going, because they're printing money for everything else.
Councillor Kane.
Thanks for that, Ian and Michelle. Just first up, congratulations to everyone that's worked on the initiative. I think the plans are looking absolutely fantastic. There's been some interesting little questions from the community that I think will get integrated in the planning. But it's been a fantastic effort overall. I'm totally on board with Sheila's comments around the fact that it is time for there to be a big input into our community and get community working together. Certainly I'm involved in a number of community groups as well who are looking at this project and how they can be involved, and they're very excited. They see it as a perfect opportunity to all be coming together to work for the good of something for the whole district. I certainly know about all the money and the proposals that were put together through the Waimate Together group, and Ian is correct there. There's a separate pool of funding for this particular initiative throughout New Zealand, so I'm not overly concerned that there's not money there. It's just how much they apportion to this particular project. But again, talking with Joe and co, they seem fairly confident around that. But I also think it's a project that the community will rally behind should there be some sort of shortfall. I certainly, speaking from my perspective as a councillor support the project, and I'm comfortable with what's being asked for or recommended in the recommendations. And on that note, I'm happy to move the recommendations.
Thanks for that, Councillor Kane. Councillor Owen, you had a comment? Question?
Yes, thanks for that. Ian, the group, or the two groups that are together, why would you actually start with some sealing halfway to the destination? You know, I would have thought that that the roading would have to be improved at the start of it. Number one question.
Number one question, okay. Is that the hard one going to be, or is there going to be harder ones to come? Look, if you took your camper van up there, that is the bottleneck. It's juddering, it's all rutted out there. We've got to actually keep those vehicles moving, and a bit of tar seal in that first 100 metres means that the vehicles haven't slowed right down at the bend and stopped and then started again. The road further down, it's a mismatch, I give you that. You've got the two culverts that Robert and we've talked about replacing through the London's Gorge, but then right down the bottom, yes, it could be tar sealed, but that's a huge cost. We looked at the costs, and I think it's about, here I say, 100,000 a kilometre. And so you run away with a lot of money on flat ground, which we could keep better graded and keep a surface there. Right up, I'd like the next 500 metres after that turn off tar sealed, but then that's another, probably we'll end up throwing away 100,000 without the roading numbers, which Robert Moffat tells me we have to have. We have to have a counter number to show the ratio cost ratio to roading. And if we could get the more traffic up there, that would help that to get government funding on roading. But let's just wee steps. I think Robert's suggestion's right. Wee steps to start with, and we get baby steps and then grow a bit more. Like, I've even had people, David, respond and say, man alive, I looked at that plan. We could have weddings up there. You know, we could be up there, you know, with weddings up there on that site. Things I hadn't even considered.
True. What's the overall estimate for stage one and stage two, Ian?
I'll let Michelle answer that.
Come on.
So for stage one, you've got that in front of you. That's 304,000. Yes. And for stage two, let me just look. And I can't quite read it. It is around 290,000.
And that would be without the roading that we've just been talking about, wouldn't it?
Correct.
Yeah, so there's still, yeah, probably another $300,000 on top of that, yeah.
But you get a lot more for that too, David. It's, you know, we're talking about areas for playgrounds and, you know, some exciting stuff for bike jumps. And so, you know, we're talking about adding a lot of value to families that want to go up there.
But I still get
a... I share... Councillor McCoy, is his concern is that, you know, I hope that the community, the wider community, would be for something like this too, but I'm just wondering, it really has me concerned that currently we're probably not going to hit it nicely on the reception side, but that might be my pessimism at the moment.
Stuart.
Yeah, thank you, Mayor. Look, I just want to start from the beginning, and you've got to remember 3 years ago, Michelle wrote a very, very good report, which attracted some pro bono work from a company 3 years ago that actually came to council and set up the terms of reference for the Economic Development Group. From that, we moved forward and we actually went to public consultation, which produced, Michelle, I can't remember, I think there was around, in the end, 8 to 12 projects that were fully supported by the community. And the Whitehall project was clearly in the top five. I also want to mention that the roadworks that have been considered halfway up that road are actually, Dan, looking for you, where are you, somewhere, is actually part of programmed works around safety in any regard. It's moving forward. It's just that we're taking the opportunity to take the cost of that to add to the project to assist with gaining funding. So to answer Council McAwee's question a little bit, I think probably our total exposure is $20,000, which actually comes from the budget that was originally provided for pre-COVID out of dividends funding, not rates money. As I say, it was one of the top projects supported by the community through that whole public consultation process. So I hope that clears a little bit up of the history. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you.
And also, Stuart, if I could jump in there, like we're spending $20,000. We've presently got $110,000 in that actual economic development group's budget hold. So, we're thinking about holding out some of the powder dry, but also stage two, perhaps we can, again, help seed fund that as well, or some other projects that may come up. So we haven't thrown it all on black of our cash, but we're saying we support this project 100%. This is where we think we should be aiming for to start.
And thanks, Ian. Councillor Pankhurst, and then Councillor Pankhurst.
Just a comment. Very well said, Councillor Paul. I think the district needs to go ahead here. And we haven't been doing much in the last few years. I think it's a great project and get into it. Thank you.
Thanks for that, Colin. Fabia. Still muted. There we go.
I think it's a great parks and recreation project. I'll definitely give it that. It's adding a lot of public community value. That's great. I'm still pretty sceptical about its economic development potential and... but that's fine. I'm just looking out actually at the White Horse now from the other side of State Highway 1, and I would be just looking at some of those plans. I'd be pretty loath to think that we're going to cut great swathes out of the side of the hill to put in paths and tracks around the actual, that hill front, because I think that that creates some, that's going to damage a really fantastic natural environment, and I'd be pretty concerned if we're going to go ahead with some of those designs that are in that plan. So those are my comments at this stage.
Thanks, Fabian. Righto, Sandy, you got a comment?
Just quickly, it's good to look at the plans, but a site visit would be really good at some stage, just to have someone, outline what we're going to do.
Yeah, and Sandy, I think that's actually a really great idea. And I think once we come out of this and get down to level two, it would be something that we could definitely put on the agenda to get up there and run through, because it's great to see when you're actually in place you can visualise a lot better, I think, of what it's going to look like. So just comments from me, I agree with Sheila and Colin and Sharon that we need to proceed with this type of project. I think it sends a good signal to the community. This has been in the making for a number of years. There's been some strong feedback via the consultation and several different formats around that was definitely identified as one of the key areas that we need to that we should be looking at first. I agree with Stuart with the roading that is proposed is actually just probably bringing forward and slightly enhancing what we had intended for that area under minor safety repairs anyway. I agree with Ian, and it says that baby steps, let's take it one small step at a time. Let's see what sort of response we get to stage one of the development before we go full bore ahead. And obviously stage two and change and be modified accordingly and that sort of thing. So I fully support the project. I think that's something that we should be getting on with. Yes, I've seen Miriam waving her hand, and Tom, I'll get to you shortly, and that sort of thing. So As I get, I'm happy to support this project moving forward, and I think that it sends a good signal that, you know, we have stated right throughout the COVID lockdown that we want to keep this community moving. We want to keep economic development going within the district, and I think that this would send the right signal to say Waimate District Council is up and running and charging ahead with its planned projects in the coming months and years ahead. So that's my little rant. So I'll pass on quickly to Tom and then Miriam for a comment. Oh, Tom looks like he's frozen up. So Miriam.
Okay. I've deliberately let everyone else have a talk first. Having been on the steering committee since its inception, I've had a lot of opportunity to see what's going on and to say what I needed to say at the time. So I just want to say it's really good to see it get to this stage, and the roading issue is probably one of the factors that I think holds back our visitors and community from making as much of the asset that as it is right now, from being able to utilise it as fully as we could, because a site visit, we should be able to just jump in our car and drive up there very easily. And I have to say that I am hesitant to take my little shopping cart up there. The road, I don't mind the flat, I don't mind the culverts. It's just getting up that first bit of the main access road up to the top there. That is the issue that I've always had. In saying that, my brother took his sports car up there with very thin tyres and enjoyed the drive. But, I think the sooner that we can get this on the go and have our council contribution being in the way of, in getting people up there, that roading bit, I think we'll see it used a lot. And so we're not going to have the overseas visitors able to make use of that, but hopefully we will have lots of domestic tourists coming and enjoying what we've got here locally. Thank you.
Cool. Thanks for that, Miriam. So I see Tom's, and we're very lucky to have two Toms on screen at the moment. I have anyway. So Tom, you had a comment.
Yes, after that avalanche of accolades, this is going to sound negative. It's not intended to be. I think it's a great project. But how do we justify spending the thick end of $1 million? And how do we call that economic development? It's recreational development. It's a great idea and a wonderful project and all of those things. But how does it do anything for our economy? Now, that's a hard question that I have been asked and I will be asked again. But I need a real good answer. I haven't got one.
Well, right out, Sam putting his hand up. So that's Stuart. So I'll pass on to him and he's going to give you the answer, Tom.
Well, part of the answer actually is that any enhancement you make to your community, whether it be parks, gardens, recreational services, that attracts more visitors to your area, improves your economic development. It improves the economy. And that is what came out of the public consultation. That's why we use that tag. Look, I don't disagree with comments made, but you know, you can't clinically separate the two. I don't anyway. That's my comment. Thank you, Mayor.
Thanks, Stuart. Yeah, listen, I reiterate too, Tom, that I know it is difficult in these difficult times to spend money like this. I think that the way that I'll be promoting it is that for the amount that we as a council are putting in, was only a small proportion of the overall total of the project, and I think it would be great value for money. Now, these types of projects, as we've said, are about partnerships. I think that it's really important that we show both good faith and support to the likes of Waimate Together, who are applying for the biggest percentage of the funding, and I think that, listen, time will tell as to whether it brings huge economic development to the district. It's a very, very difficult thing to measure. But I think that we've just, these are the types of projects that we need to stand up and say we're moving ahead with. Otherwise, if we put everything down to a dollar, we'll still be sitting around the table having done nothing in 12 months, 2 years, and 5 years' time. Any other questions at all?
I actually support it.
Yeah.
But I need to arm myself with those justifications. And for all your very good efforts, they sound still to me a little bit thin. We're going to be asked some pretty hard questions in the next year, and we have to be prepared to answer them. I'm uncomfortable with the answers, but if that's all we've got, that's all we've got. I'm not opposed to it at all. I think it's a brilliant concept, but we are in very difficult times, and then those times are not going to be over in a very short time.
Yeah, fully aware of that, Tom, and we won't go round and round the table justifying either one way or the other, because I think we'll be here all day and that sort of thing. I think there's been a fairly clear indication. Sheila, last comment.
It's a silly comment, but the accessible toilets, if we buy in bulk, do we get a cheaper rate? And we could do all our public toilets with it. Just silly. Just positive.
I don't think it's actually silly, Sheila, because I think it'll be a really good test as to how they work and that sort of thing, and it will open up opportunities for us to perhaps put some in. And we know it's something that we are looking at, so I think it'll be a really good test bed for the future. So getting back to the resolutions, is that it's been moved by Councillor Kane. I take it that, Sharon, that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 and 7. And I'm more than happy to second those. So you've got that, Carolyn. Good as gold. Okay, I'll ask that all in favour, please raise their hand.
What page?
Page 38, Sheila.
Okay.
You got it?
Oh, yeah. Thank you.
Now? Okay, all in favour, raise their hand. Those against. So that you're against, David, is that correct? No, you're muted. I'm not sure. Can you unmute yourself, David? And I'd like clear. Is that four?
Yeah, no, fine. I put that up when you asked.
Oh, okay, four, thank positive. You. That's great. Oh, that's great to see. Okay, well, that's been moved, seconded, and passed. It's great to see that that's a unanimous decision. So thank you very, very much for that, everybody. I think it's really great that we're moving ahead with these projects. Moving on to agenda item 17.6, which is the Arari Tamuka Opahi Periora Zone Committee annual report. And that. So obviously, I'll take this as read. I don't know whether Tom, whether that was it you that wanted, if you want to give us an update on the OTOP committee at all.
I can.
Just briefly.
We've asked for some clarification of our terms of reference. We have yet to have that. It's very frustrating on that committee not knowing what we're there for when there's so much important work we should be doing. But I don't want to gazump Hamish. He's our chair, and he's got a very difficult task. But I wonder why we even exist if we haven't got clear terms of reference so that we can work with community groups to get on with the work. And we haven't got that at the moment. It's overwhelmingly dominated by ECAN staff, and that frustrates the daylights out of me. And some of us have raised those issues with the chair of ECAN, and I've signaled those to you, Craig, so you know what they are. It still has an enormously important job to do, but we need clear terms of reference, and we haven't got them.
Thanks for that, Tom. I see Hamish, unfortunately, is unable to be with us, but Peter Burt, I believe that you're listening in here. I don't know whether you've got any comment that you'd like to make.
Oh, yes. Good morning, everyone. I don't want to take anything away from what everyone else is here for. I'm actually only here as a passenger just to listen in, because I'm the zone lead for ECAN in Lower Waitaki. and we're about to hear the report from Bruce on that. But if you bear with me for a second, Tom, good to hear from you. It's interesting sitting in on a council meeting from here, and you know councils mean business when they've got firearms stacked on the wall behind them. So, interesting. And it's great to see the cut and thrust of another council group and see the same discussions that you're having that we're having at TDC. And good to see that you know, everyone's really behind their community and understanding going forward about what we need to do as councillors around economic development and everything. It's some really interesting times, and I know you guys will be have been working very hard behind the scenes to make those really crucial decisions. Tom, just around the comments, and I don't want to take up your time. I'm only here as a passenger, but just to be clear around ECAN's position, and even though I'm only 6 months into my role, it's one of the key things that there are some very clear terms of reference around ECAN's role. Although they are there fundamentally to provide a lot of structure and resources, it is fundamental to the zone committees that their ownership is in the hands of the executive, of the people that are there on the committee, and that they're the ones steering the ship, and they're the ones that are actually putting the strategic direction and the requirements. And ECAN are basically there as facilitators to make sure that it's pulled together, and that they're there to provide the vehicle for all the instruments of actually advice, science, water, and those types of things. So it's interesting you're saying that, Tom, and I hope that can be clarified for you going forward, because I know that the regional councillors are in fact putting a lot of work into coming out with where are we now as a snapshot of zone committees and what are the priorities, given all the feedback from all the zone committees and yourselves as TAs, representatives on those. So yeah, thank you. Great to be to listen in and having this opportunity. So I wish you all very, very well in terms of what you've got ahead of you for the Waimate community.
Cool. Thanks for that, Peter. And yeah, I'm looking forward to sitting down with Jenny Hoey and a couple of the other councillors when we have a one-on-one. I know that she's coming to visit us at some stage, and maybe we can Tom can thrash out a bit more of his points if he likes. So I'm happy to move to the recommendation that the report's accepted. Councillor Paul, you had a question?
Well, I'm just... maybe I'm on Paul's, on Tom's side, I'm not sure, but this report, and I'll be honest, the one following it, all are really airy-fairy. They don't actually give us any indication as to whether they've achieved anything. Nowhere does it say they've actually achieved any water quality improvements. So I just wonder, it was a bunch of words to me as far as I'm concerned.
All right, thanks for that, Sheila. And I see that we've got Bruce coming up next, so maybe he might be able to clarify on the lower one, Jackie, about achievements and what they've actually achieved. But as I said, we've got a visit coming from the chair of ECAN in the not too distant future. So that's something that maybe we'll be able to take up with her in her role and that. So we'll work through it. So as I said, I've moved the recommendation. The report's accepted. Do I have a seconder? Seconded, Councillor O'Connor. I put the motion. Everybody raise their hand. Those against, carried. Thank you for that. So it's going to be a great pleasure now to welcome on Bruce Murphy, the chair of the Lower Waitaki Zone Committee. Obviously, their annual report is attached as well. So I'll hand it over to Bruce. I don't know whether you wanted to comment at all before we get into question and answers. You have to unmute yourself, Bruce.
Is that better now?
Beautiful, thank you.
Cool. Kia ora, everyone. How are you this morning? I'll perhaps touch on that later on, Sheila, but I would just like to answer any questions that people may have around our report, and then maybe comment on some stuff that's going on that I think's an issue in our area, and then we can perhaps go on and for further questions then. So is there any questions related to the report as it is now?
No, looks like, oh, hang on, Councillor Paul.
Just with the willows, I know you've been doing a lot of work as far as that. Has it improved? I know there's a lot of gouging in the river down, getting towards the mouth. So I just wondered, have you noticed any improvements, or is it still too early to tell?
I think that the willow removals are really long-term propositions, so we haven't seen any immediate improvements in water quality. And perhaps to your point before, Sheila, one thing that I have banged on since I've been on the zone committee is around water testing and water quality. We can't answer that question that you have upraised. We would like to see more testing from ECAN and from private people so we can actually get that information in a collated form right along the Waitaki and as far north as our catchment goes. So that is one of the things that we really do need to nail down, because there is a lot of misunderstanding of what the CWMS is, but at the heart of it is the improvement of water quality for all our community members.
Hello, any other questions for Bruce at all? Must be a pretty good report, Bruce. There's no question.
Well, could I just have 5 minutes to make a couple of comments then, Mr. Chair?
Yeah, absolutely. Please do.
Yeah, so obviously there's been a real emphasis in the last 4 months on catchment groups in our area, and that's how we really see this thing moving forward. So ECAN have been negotiations with the MPI around how we would facilitate or fund a facilitator. So we're working, coming up, there's the Haka Sustainability Group, there's the Waiha Wainono catchment groups already in operation, but there's also some parts of it, catchments in our area, that don't have any support. And we see that as a generational change. If we can get some funding in place and get all the farmers and stakeholders on side, it'll be mutually beneficial for the area. And that's one of the things we're really... we spent a lot of time debating on how we go about that, but at our last meeting, we're pretty positive with the outcome to get an application into MPI. Another issue, if there's no questions around that, or we can answer at the end, is there's still some genuine nervousness in our area around this essential freshwater. Realising that the government has several things, as you do, on your plate now to deal with the immediate implications of COVID, but there is still a sense of unease within the community members that perhaps this might give a chance for these water limits and bits and pieces to be pushed a bit further through the submission process. So we really just are nervous as to see what the outcome of that's going to look like. What are you guys thinking? Anyone got any comments on that?
You're probably, Bruce, I've got a comment on that. Is the indications to me that are coming out of central government is that they're not lifting their foot off the accelerator, that they want to push ahead with the essential freshwater program. I think that if people are looking at it thinking that they're going to get a reprieve or a change in direction from central government because of the COVID-19 situation, I think that's false hope or false lead. It seems to me that the government is definitely pushing ahead with its essential freshwater program, and there's nothing that I've heard to the to counter that, to say that they're looking at lifting off or relaxing the direction that they're heading. So that's basically, I don't know, well, Stuart, whether you want to comment there that if I'm on the right track.
Oh, I don't know whether any of us can confirm that we're actually on the right track, which actually leads into my question. You know, there's multiple plan changes coming about that are designed to achieve a minimum standard of water, you know, across our district. And one of the things that I find I don't know whether it's anxiety or frustration or a bit of both, but when I attend the Canterbury Mayoral Forum, and we've got the community, the Canterbury Water Management Strategy, it's got 157 programs in there, you know, and it involves, you know, farmers, TAs, industry, Ngāi Tahu, and all that sort of stuff. None of that stuff's costed, and there's probably lacking a bit of detail for my sort of background engineering brain to wrap my head around these things. And then on top of that, we've got the National Freshwater Strategy. And when we start looking at biodiversity and adding that back in, and drinking water review, and I'm talking about catchments in this regard, when I pull my local government dragnet through all of that and start trying to pick up the pieces that I need to lead from a chief executive point within council, I get a bit of a headache, to be honest. And when I seek answers, I don't get them. And I'll give you one example. I actually was going to contact you, Bruce, or somebody that to try and get an understanding of what is actually required as part of those proposals that's also contained in farm management plans. And how do we, you know, under biodiversity, we're supposed to go and have a look at wetlands and fencing off these areas and that. But I'm sure these things would be contained in a farm management plan. And how many people are we going to get upset if we move forward with those proposals? And to me, there's just too many balls in the air, you know, it's all a bit hazy. But they're my comments. I'm just a bit frustrated around the quantum of all of this stuff.
And I thanks for that, Stuart. And listen, I reckon that'd be really good to stick on the diary as a sit down with Bruce and some key players and perhaps fed farmers and look at those farm management plans. And you know, we don't want to be doubling up on stuff that's already being done, and maybe it's just advising people that in higher places that actually it's already being done. Tom, you had a comment.
Yeah, thank you. Just 2 points. And I reiterate that the work of these committees is crucial to where we go in the future. Given that essential water project will end up as a national policy statement and all other planning instruments will have to be consistent with it, I was hoping that the catchment committees and the zone committees would give some advice to Environment Canterbury and to TLAs to ask ECAN to park up the process of Plan Chain 7 until we know what essential water is going to look like. We're charging down the road of getting Plan Chain 7 cemented in, and there's a high likelihood we're going to have to re-go over a lot of that ground. So that's a frustration for me. I'm more of a practical person than anything else. The other issue that I think has been overlooked, that the real work of implementing the management strategy will be done by farmers, it will be done by landowners, it will be done by people who actually have their hands on. And so far, they are left out of the equation. Regardless of what the equation says, my committee in particular spends a hell of a lot of time talking to themselves and talking to ECAN, but they don't talk to anybody else. And I can't seem to break that cycle. That's my frustration. But when the good work does happen, it will be farmers that do it, nobody else. You're quite right, Craig. We need to have a discussion with the new ECAN group and the new ECAN council and see if we can't smooth some of these things out.
Well, thanks for that, Tom. And perhaps I see Hamish has joined us now. I don't know whether you've got any comments, Hamish, around the Plan Change 7 and whether, you know, your thoughts on putting that on hold until we see this essential freshwater package. So any comments?
Yeah, thank you, Mayor Craig. Hi, everyone. I hope you're having a good day and the meeting's going well. For those who haven't met me, Hamish McFarlane, I'm chair of the OTOP Zone Committee. And as you'll be aware, yeah, we've got Plan Change 7 underway at the moment. My feeling, and I think it's reflected within the committee, it was spoken about at our last briefing, was it seems quite a leap of faith to put all the work into the hearings and people submitting and everything when we're so close to having the NPS released. It would seem sensible to us, mostly as a group, that we actually see what comes out in that, and then we've got a chance to rebut it and see how it reflects on our zone a little bit rather than pushing ahead.
Yeah, thanks for that, Hamish. I think that's pretty much the general sort of consensus. Hopefully, Peter, you can pass that up through the ranks and maybe have some influence. No doubt I'll be talking to Jenny and see if we can do something. Councillor Pankhurst, you had a quick comment.
Yeah, just a question, Bruce, about the willows, but the same as Sheila. Is there much work going on there? I think it's a huge problem. And just a comment on the winter grazing as well, Bruce. Could you sort of enlighten us a wee bit more on the willows? Thank you.
Right, now, as these are brought to projects are brought to us within our catchment groups or our zone, we just basically sign off on where we think willow removal is beneficial. And I know we've done a fair bit down the Hicker and also in the Black Hole. So it's just part of the start of the restorative process of cleaning the willows out and then planting natives.
And the winter grazing thing, Bruce?
Look, I think going back to Tom's comments, it was interesting hearing him say, you know, farmers will be the people that sort this out. And I actually think he's right. So, you know, there's a fair degree of energy and need for information and farming processes around hill country and whatnot and intensive winter cropping just to try and do it better. So these field days are well supported. You know, I think farmers are trying to do the best they can do. I look at the essential fresh water, and from my point of view, most people are pretty happy to move along with the strength, the fencing and that sort of stuff, but they're worried about the water quality. So there's a real desire out there for farmers to do a better job. But to Stuart's point before, there's just so much information coming at us. You know, how do we know what's right and what's wrong? So I think it's just a desire to do a better job, Colin.
Thanks for that.
Sharon, you had a comment?
Yep, thanks, Mr. Mayor. Just a comment, I suppose, is along the similar lines as what you've been saying yourself, Craig, that, you know, and Stuart, there's a huge, huge amount of work coming in from all angles on top of business as usual. And that's the same for our farming community and urban and councils and businesses alike. I certainly just wanted to reiterate that Craig and I and Stuart, whenever we're meeting with any of these further up groups, the likes of talking with Joe Luxton MP and talking with Jackie Dean and all those sorts of ones, we are pushing that again and again, that they need to be taking that information back, that our communities are working hard enough as it is with business as usual, particularly in the current circumstances. And our council and staff are working as hard as they can on business as usual and LTPs and annual plans and all these sorts of things without the added pressure, particularly at the moment, of all this additional work. That's not to say we don't see it as important. We do reiterate that, you know, this is important that we get things right. And we certainly, I acknowledge Bruce's comments there, that the farming community are doing the best they can to try and do the best they can. There's always a small minority, whether it's urban, rural, business, community, council, whatever, that will be doing things that aren't quite acceptable. But the majority of people are working incredibly hard to do the best that they can. So we have passed on the comments that we would like to think they would consider the resource needed to do the work they're trying to push through at the moment, and the fact that not just smaller councils, mid-level councils, metro councils, and businesses and communities and farming practices themselves will struggle to have the resources, people and monetary resources, to be able to undertake this work that's being pushed through. So we're certainly at least seeking to try and push forward the idea that there's an extension on some of this, or maybe a reprioritisation of one
particular area at a time rather than loading everyone with numerous things at once, because we're all in the same boat at the moment. There's just not enough people power, time and funding to go around for everything that's required. So certainly please take away, Bruce and Hamish, that we are working as hard as we can to try and push forward those ideas from our community and those thoughts from our community and ourselves, that it's just too much. It's just too much at the moment.
Yeah, thanks for that, Sharon. Obviously, you know, we are working behind the scenes to try and smooth the waters, so to speak. But listen, I'm really, really keen to sit down in front of the chair of ECAN. I think it'd be really good to have the lights of the two chairs of our local zone committees along to that meeting, so we can really nut out what Tom's talking about, you know, about the perceived sort of disconnect and that sort of thing, and really show that we're a team down here, that we're working together, that we've got some clear outcomes that we want as residents and farmers for our district around improvement in water quality, and that, as Sharon says, we are working as hard as we possibly can. So I think that'll be a really good meeting, and I'm looking forward to it. So listen, thanks very much, Bruce, for coming in. It's been really good to catch up, getting an update on the Lower Waitaki. Thanks, Hamish, for popping in as well. It was good getting an update on what's happening in OTOP. I think that you know, you have the full support of the District Council here, and we look forward to working with you to get the best outcomes for our district. So, can I have somebody move that Bruce's report's accepted? Move Councillor O'Connor, seconded. Councillor Paul, I'll put the motion. All in favour, please raise their hand. Against, carried. Any last comments, gentlemen? Bruce, Peter, Hamish? Yeah, Hamish.
Yeah, thank you, Mayor. Look, I was just a couple of wee comments, and I hope I'm not repeating things that have been said already. But I guess very first I'd like to thank the people who are in the Zone Committee and in OTOP, and I'm sure the same, Bruce would have said the same. I mean, they're a pretty patient bunch, they're very dedicated, and they've certainly stepped into the breach, I believe, in terms of helping the district and the regional councils manage the fresh water. I guess a couple of wee things I just wanted to touch on is, I understand, yeah, there's a review underway on the role of the zone committees, and I understand that ECAN's being tasked or endorsed to actually carry out that review. I suppose some of the outcomes for you all to think about as councillors is, we've got to be very careful that as we've stepped out of the planning process, which has been probably a pretty tough process in our zone. And I certainly know that there's some quite disaffected people out there at the moment who are unhappy with how PC7 looks, and that's always going to happen with any plan. But as we move into this, I suppose, a post-plan vacuum, we've got to be careful we don't become a toothless tiger as zone committees, because if that perception becomes embedded out there, we're not going to attract the people that we need, the calibre of people that we need to sit on these committees. And there's probably a bit of disenchantment with the zone committee members at the moment about what we're able to achieve, where we go from here. I heard Bruce touch on it briefly before, that a lot of this is going to come back to funding and being able to have the horsepower to allow people to achieve gains or make these gains happen on the ground. Our committee is very much in favour of the catchment groups at a very local level. But we do believe the zone committee has got a role in helping amalgamate their dreams and their plans, and make it easier for them to access central government money or other sources of funds there, so we can actually get the things happening on the ground that we believe are going to make a difference. Another wee thing that's just floating around out there is that I think it's going to become more and more critical over the short term that our relationships between the regional council, district councils, the landowners, and also Ngāi Tahu become stronger. And if we can start working as a real team there, traditionally there's often a few divisions because of perceived different outcomes wanted, but when you break it down, a lot of what we're all after, we working together, we can achieve that, some of those outcomes with a lot, far higher degree of success than we will if we're all independent. So I think if we can pull some of those things together, we'll be, it just may mean that we can reinvigorate perhaps some of these irrigation schemes that have been put on the shelf over the last couple of years. And it may mean that with a bit of redistribution of water, we can achieve some of the outcomes we want around springs and the lowland streams and water quality in general. So I see there's a lot of room to improve in that area. And I guess just to touch on some of the nervousness around the change potentially coming up with PC7 is there is a lot of reliance on modelling. And in PC7, for example, in some areas there's two or three changes in the way we manage water over the life of the plan, and there's not really the room in there to see what the results are and whether the changes that have been made are actually giving the results we're after. And so people are naturally a wee bit nervous about signing up on a path that there's no way to diverge from. So, hey, look, there's just a couple of wee points there. Looking forward to seeing what the review comes up with. And we'd like to thank you guys for your support. And yeah, we are down on the bottom end of the region here, so we're sticking together, working together. Thank you.
Thanks for that. Thanks for that, Hamish. Peter, you had a comment?
Yeah, no, just a couple of comments before I go. So, hey, good to see you, Hamish. And obviously, your views seem to strike well with where we are as a low Waitaki, exactly what Bruce has said. Tom, just in relation to your comments, very valid and very considered. And again, that message around there's so much happening, so much from central government coming down the tube with expectations. And that plan change 7 has massive implications for farming and especially in that OTOP area, Hamish, and it's certainly acknowledged. I think the key thing now is that same message from ECAN that continually coming through that the value of zone committees is sacred. That's not going to change, and I know that this review will be interesting, and as soon as you the TAs have a massive part in that, and it'll be interesting. Fabio, if you've got any comments around that, especially in Lower Waitaki, I'm getting a really amazing vibe from that zone committee that you've restructured somewhat, and you're ready to go, and the catchment areas now are your key function. But again, just reiterating that the zone committees are about ownership is in the hands of the executive and the people that are on those zone committees, not ECAM. We're just a part of the process. Thanks for your time.
Thanks, Peter. Righto, this is probably just a quick final comment for me. We just need to remind the powers that be that the zone committees were set up as a bottom-up management and decision-making process. And I think that's been lost somewhat between the earlier times when these zone committees were set up and what we've ended up with now. So I think we need to reiterate to those higher up the chain that this is a bottom-up decision-making process that was supposed to put the power in the hands of the farmers and the land users and the community, and they need to remember that. So thanks very much, Pete. Oh, Fabi, had a comment, quick comment?
Yeah, thanks, McCraig. I'd just like to kind of reiterate some of those points that Hamish made in particular in terms of that relationship, and it kind of touches on what you were talking about just then, Craig, in terms of the bottom-up approach. I think we need to be very mindful then that kind of places some responsibility on us as a council, and including that's Waimiri, Timaru, ECAN, et cetera, that we need to recognise that voice. And if the power has been vested within that community and within the zone committee, we need to be able to kind of action some of that, some of those voices that they're providing for us. So I think it's, we can't do that kind of tokenism and say that, yes, we've given this group a voice, but then kind of get back into our council bubble and say, oh, but we've got our own business to deal with. So I think it's we really need to recognise that relationship. And I thank Hamish for bringing that up. And I think it's really important.
Yeah, and I totally agree, Fabia, that we do need to recognise that voice. And it's certainly by no means, I believe, we're treating it as tokenism and that. But in saying that, I think a lot better than we have in the past. And that's something we can work towards. So, I'm
absolutely encouraged that people, for once, understand my frustration. And that gives me a lot more enthusiasm to give it another shot and make this thing work. Thank you very much.
Okay, thanks, Tom. Okay, Bruce, last comment.
Just one comment to Hamish and Tom. It's a challenge. Having been through Plan Change 3 and Plan Change 5, the vacuum that comes behind the intense process of submissions is really hard to handle. Our view is to try and capture all those different people in your community then really comes down to catchment groups, and that's why we're pushing it. It's just hard work, and Plan Change 7 will never be quite right, just like Plan Change 3 and Plan Change 5 wasn't, but you've just got to keep forging through with the process, and I understand how much energy that takes, and I'm very lucky in our committee. We've got a great set of people and a really strong iwi interest that really just helps some good, robust debate. So well done, guys. Just keep it up.
Yep. Thanks for that, Bruce. So, Carolyn, we've got a mover and a seconder for the accepting that report, and that's all done. Righto, thank you, gentlemen. It's a pleasure to have you along, and we'll move on to the more mundane council business. So, thanks, guys. Moving on to agenda item 17.8, which is the Pop Black Memorial Scholarship Trust appointment. I'll take Carolyn. Yep.
I was just going to say we didn't carry that last motion, please, Mr. Mayor.
Oh, sorry. Okay. All in favour of accepting the Low Attacky Resort, raise your hand. Against, carried. Thank you for that. So moving on to the Pop Black Trust. Take the report as read. Is there any questions at all in relation to this?
Happy to move it.
Happy to move it. Thank you, David. Is Fabio a question or happy to second it? Happy to second it. Thank you for that. Okay, I'll put the motion that Rita Stewart is the new, Black Scholarship representative.
Can I make a comment? And Sheila's got a comment too. Yep. You didn't see our frantic waving.
I'd just
like to make a comment that there be some kind of recognition towards Mavis Andrew for all the time that she has spent on the number of years that she's spent on this committee. I'm fully in support of what the recommendations are, but I just wanted to bring that up as we go through this item.
Yeah, absolutely, Miriam. And Carolyn and I can work with the chair to put together a letter of thanks to Mavis for her outstanding service. Sheila?
Oh, just a comment. Was Rita Stewart okay with this? It doesn't say that in this.
My understanding is that she is fine.
Okay.
Okay, so it's been moved and seconded. Sandy, you got a question?
Just a quick comment that I didn't even know this existed, and I think this fund needs to be publicised to all ratepayers within the district.
Yeah, and it is something that we're always aware of. I know it does get advertised locally in the Trader and it used to be in the Courier and things like that, but I think it's something that we need to probably get out there. This is only one of two or three of these different funds available. So I think it's something we need to be mindful that we are spreading right throughout the whole district. Sharon, a comment?
Just to note on that point, it's advertised far and wide. It's not a council fund. It is a memorial scholarship fund. It is also run through Community Link. They publicise it extensively. It is put out sorry you haven't heard of it, Sandy, but it is has been going for a very, very long time, and it is put out all over the place, including the fact they've extended who they will accept applications from. It was originally only for nursing training, and now it does incorporate, I think, physio and a few other medical programs as well. So it certainly does go out far and wide. I've seen it in the Oamaru Mail, and I've seen it in Timaru Herald and all over the place. So it's just unfortunate you haven't caught that one, Sandy, but it definitely does go out and about.
Yep. Right, thanks for that. And as I said, listen, there's nothing to stop us putting it on our website and trying to get it out there. And now that you know about it, Sandy, I expect to see you spouting it to the neighbourhood, telling everybody about it. So it's been moved and seconded that recommendations 1 and 2. So all those in favour, please raise your hand. Against, carried. Thank you for that. So that brings to the end of the public meeting. And that, so we now need to go into public excluded. We'll have 2 minutes just to go and have a comfort stop and a stretch of our legs. And at in about 2 or 3 minutes time, we'll get back into it. So go and have a stretch, people, and pat the cat or feed the dog, or whatever you need to do for a couple of minutes.
Mr. Mayor, yes,
Sharon.
Could I just say that could we move and second to move into public excluded, and then the members of the public, etc., can leave the meeting?
Oh, now.
Just so that you adjourn while we're in public excluded.
Oh, okay, yeah, break. Okay. So, all right.
Because then we can make sure the room is clear for public excluded.
Yeah, okay, good as go. Well, that's moved by Councillor Kane, seconded by Councillor Paul, that we move into public excluded. All those in favour, raise a hand. Against, carried. Sheila, you got a quick comment, or was that just moving and seconding? Just seconding, okay. Right, have a stretch, and we'll come back in a couple of seconds.
Craig?
Yep.
Can I give you a call, just a call on your mobile?
Give us a ring in about an hour or so, Al.
Yeah, okay, I'll give you a call then. Thanks, mate. Okay.
Thanks, mate. Right.
Okay, Sharon, are you there? Can you lock the meeting after you've kicked everybody out, please?